Well, Tara Shay Nesbitt, you are an award-winning author. You wrote The Wives of Los Alamos. You have come out with a book. I believe it came out in 2020. It's on the New York Times 100 Notable Books of 2020, Beheld, a novel. And it's a very foreboding image on the front cover of a black crow and what looks like a dying sunflower. What exactly is this image on the front?
Yes. What is that image on the front? That it's a wonderful artist did the both covers, and the first one had two women on the cover, and then the second one is a close-up of those two things. So something I love about that cover is how it suggests both the birth, you know, the growth, everything that thrives from the flowers, and then the sort of ominous nature of the crow as part of that story. And I think that both of those things are part of the novel, both a lot of thriving and growth and death.
Because this is a story of really planting new seeds, but the death follows.
That's right. That's right. The story, you know, it opens up when it opens up 10 years after the Mayflower passengers have arrived, and they're somewhat settled in Plymouth. But a murder occurs within the palisade, within this, like, the wall that they build, the fence that they build. And so the novel's exploring this back and forth of what happened that day from the perspectives of the longstanding governor's wife and a newly freed indentured servant. And she is married to someone who's always been disliked in the community. And so you have, I mean, practically, their day involves so much of, like, making the community run by baking and gardening, but you also have this murder that's going to happen. And so they're looking back at that day to sort of talk about what could have happened, how did it all begin, how did the community even get there to the point where there is this kind of violence that's going to ensue within the community, because they had been so focused maybe on what was outside the community, the sense of threat. They settle themselves atop Patuxent, which was a Wampanoag community, and the Wampanoag community has now moved outside of the palisade and is very thriving. But that, I think, is part of what they feared. But like a lot of times, the fears are somewhat unjustified, and the violence comes from within the community. And so that's what the novel's exploring, I think, and how that ties into our sense of American history and that Thanksgiving story I thought I knew, but it turns out it's a lot more complicated than that.
So Beheld is a work of historical fiction, and it's following these two central female characters and this murder that's underlying the whole story.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I was thinking about, you know, what about the Mayflower story might have I gotten wrong? And then I came across the longstanding governor's journals, in which he talks about all these deaths that happen aboard the Mayflower in that first winter. But he left out the cause of death for his wife, his very own wife. And so that got me started. And from looking at her, what could have happened to her, because she was on the Mayflower, and nobody really knows what happened. It's somewhat of a mystery. Some people say that she slipped, but nobody who was on the boat gives a first-hand account of what happened. And then I started looking around for court cases, because I was thinking, like, well, what are the laws? And if I can understand what the laws are, then I can know what people were doing wrong. You know, you only make a law if there's been somebody who's trespassed it. And that's when I found this first murder trial and learned that both, at least one person involved in the murder was on the Mayflower. And so from there, I thought it would be a way to look at both what could have what happened to this community, and also what are the ways that I thought I knew who these pilgrims were. And it was eye-opening how much I did not know about who those pilgrims were and what that passage was like.
That's such a juicy story. So the ship is docked, and then she falls off the ship. Just docked right there.
That's the thing. Yeah, the ship was moored off of what is now Provincetown Harbor, and her husband had gone out scouting for a place for them to settle. And while a lot of the men are away, she falls overboard. But because the story, we only know that story from somebody telling a biography of Bradford like 80 years later, and he wasn't on the ship, I think it calls into question the other reasons something could have happened. Because do you really slip off of a moored ship? And why would nobody have been around and all of these things?
And nobody seemed to be very concerned with it at all if the only mention is 80 years later in a biography.
Yeah, I wondered so much why Bradford didn't talk more about his wife's death. And there's only one little sentence in which he says, he talks about himself in third person. So instead of I did this, he says, William Bradford's wife soon did perish. And then he says something like, and then he sent for another lady and they had some more kids. So it's a very quick mention. And part of me thought, okay, it could be grief that he just couldn't go into it. But part of me thought that it didn't fit this notion of how he would say, like, God's plan or a sense of purpose for what could have happened. Like, how do you make reasonable sense if it wasn't an accident? And especially if it's someone you care about so much. So that is directly tied to then 10 years later, you flash forward, and the story is told from Bradford's second wife. And she was close friends, as I've imagined it, she was close friends with the woman who slipped off the ship, off the ship. And so you get her story, and you get this indentured servant story, kind of trying to figure out what really is going on here with this community. And these two women do not agree or see eye to eye about what that community is like. Because there's a lot of economic difference, religious difference, really a lot of foundational differences in that first Plymouth community.
We are speaking with Tarashe Nesbitt, the author of Beheld. It's such an interesting backdrop, that time period of the Pilgrims' first coming, because ostensibly the Pilgrims were fleeing the old world because of religious intolerance. They wanted to start a new life, a new way of living. And they come here and they become almost even more tyrannical than the world they left behind.
Yes, that is exactly right. The things I didn't know before researching this book is that they were in Holland. They weren't in England. So they had religious freedom, but they were immigrants in Holland. And in being immigrants, it was difficult for them to rise economically and socially. William Bradford and other elders had this proposal of, like, let's get out of here and found our own English colony. They wanted to be English. They were worried their kids were becoming too Dutch. There's this term, like, intermarrying. Their children were, you know, integrating within this very thriving mix of cultures that was happening during the Golden Age in Holland. So they looked to the south, and then they thought, oh, you know, this will not be good for our English bodies. We like a colder climate. And so then they were intending on the Virginia colony. And we know a lot of the rest of what happens. But they paid a hired soldier to come with them as a place to have a person for defense. And curiously, they didn't bring their pastor with them. So if they were looking for religious freedom, they actually already had it, and they didn't bring their pastor. This is really curious to me. I had not known that before. And they were not open to the religious differences of their indentured servants. So they had people that were helping them, and a lot of those people were Anglican. And Bradford gets really mad one Christmas when the Anglicans are celebrating openly, and he throws something akin to a bat across the yards and says, like, you know, if this is an important holiday that you want to celebrate, do your revelry inside. And this just not okay. And pastors often were asked to leave because they wanted to preach to both the Anglicans and the Puritans. And that was a problem. And of course, like many Wampanoag and Native American scholars have criticized the sense that we consider it a foundational story of religious freedom and openness, and yet what happens next is the opposite of that. There was a lot of violence. Miles Standish, their hired militiaman, gets mad at some point because someone, a Massachusetts man, a Native American man, kind of jokes with him, like, because he's so short, and he says, "Are you even a man?" And Miles Standish rounds up the militia, and they, under the pretense of trade, kill men and at least one boy, and then comes back and takes that, you know, that wrapped flag of sorts, that a bloody parcel, and flies it across the meeting house as a kind of flag. And it was shocking to me that that kind of violence was part of these pilgrims. And I think it tells a different story, and it asks us to maybe reconsider that story we've been told and reckon with it. And I wonder if we can reckon with it, with those kinds of foundations, that it might be an opportunity for change rather than suppressing it.
Well, so don't joke that Miles Standish was barely taller than a sapling. That's such an interesting part of the story, that there is so much violence, there is so much destruction, and yet it's kind of painted as this rosy gathering, and everything was maybe a little rough, but everyone got along in the end. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that we like to kind of color up this time in history as being far rosier than it was?
Yeah, you know, there's so many different ways of thinking of how that started and why it continues. Historically, even looking at Bradford's journals, Bradford's book of Plymouth Plantation, he wrote that book, and it's the first time he uses that term, pilgrims. We called ourselves pilgrims, and he talks about his conflicted feelings about leaving Holland, and they leave their only son behind, and his wife dies right as they get there. You know, these are not good things, and yet when he writes their story, the story of Plymouth, he's narrating it as an older man, and I think he has a bit of reverie, and he also is narrating it at a time when the colony is in some ways being subsumed by the Massachusetts Bay Colony. And so he needs to, I think, give a sturdy sense of why it was a great colony, and it is a great colony, and it should be respected and revered. So those first books do look like, see how everything was great. See how everything was worth it. And I'm not sure that those sacrifices were worth it, but I can understand why he felt like he needed to say that. And then beyond that, the sense of we need to feel like we weren't settlers, bringing our families, settling down, and taking over a land, the Northeastern Woodlands, that was already quite populated, because I don't have a good solution to that, because it's a very ongoing thing. It's been 400 plus years in the making, but the presence of people here for 14,000 years in the Northeastern Woodlands, and it doesn't feel good to say, actually, this is a time of mourning. But you do have, like, on Thanksgiving in Plymouth, there is a kind of parade, but there is also a day of mourning in which people go to a very famous statue that is of one of the Wampanoag leaders, and acknowledge and spend time with how the arrival of the Mayflower passengers is the initial arrival of white settler colonialism.
Tarsha, when you were writing this novel, Beheld, you've received numerous accolades for it since it's been published, but did you know writing this and kind of building the story that you had struck gold, that you hit a really incredible idea here?
I was terrified, because it is such a big story in America. And what happened was that I was just haunted by this mystery about what happened with Dorothy Bradford. And I had so many questions, and that's often what happens for me, is that when I'm at a place of multiple questions, and I'm like, I just have to know, and I can see an immediate link to where we're at now. I thought, this is a xenophobic, divided time in America. How did we get here? And this story is showing that in so many ways. So I don't know that I felt like, this, can I do this story? But I couldn't not do the story. I mean, it sounds really silly, but the characters wouldn't leave me alone. And so I really had to keep going. And I had to learn, like, do they have forks? And I learned really cool phrases like God's back parts for the way that God is always present and all of these wild things. But I wasn't sure. I just knew I couldn't not write it, I guess. And that really powered me through it.
So would you view Beheld as an optimistic book or as rather pessimistic, because some of these kind of unsavory details rise again to the surface? And as Western people, as Americans, we tend to really value our ancestors and our shared history, and having a history that's not entirely rosy. How do you think we might view ourselves now?
Yeah, I hope the book reveals that I'm having a conversation with the past. And that it's an ask to have a conversation with the past and look a bit again. There are characters that we might have revered that are called into question, like Miles Standish and William Bradford. But I have a neighbor who's a relative of the Billington family, and she quite appreciated that some characters who have always been seen as unsavory by Bradford and through history are given another look. So I would say that it's a book that tries to hold both. Ultimately, I am a very optimistic person, but I think that we all have to acknowledge that there are things to be critical of, and that we can be hopeful through that criticism. So it's a bit of both.
Beheld is the latest novel from Tarashe Nesbitt. If people want to figure out more about the book or maybe join a group discussion, are there some book clubs online? Are there ways that people can connect with you?
Yes, there is. If you go to my website, tarashenesbitt.com, you can find all of my contact information. I love to join in with book clubs. I know right now the Hingham Library is having a book club event, and I'm doing book club events in my neighborhood, but I also Zoom into them, and there's Q&As that you can find on the Bloomsbury website. If you have a book club and you're curious about what kinds of questions can we talk about, you can find, we've co-created some discussion questions for the book as well.
Well, thank you so much for spending some time to talk about your new novel.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Well, hopefully you're enjoying the rest of your rainy day.
Yes, I am. I've got an hour and then picking up the kids.
Well, excellent.
It's good writing time.
It is. Oh, you are writing another book already?
I am. Yeah, I'm energetically in something else, but it's a little too soon to talk about. Mm. I don't want to lose its steam, but I'm in something, and hopefully I'll be able to share more soon.
Oh, we love secrets. Well, we hope to hear from it very soon, and thank you once again.
Thank you.
That was Tarashe Nesbitt. She is the author of The Wives of Los Alamos and her latest novel, Beheld. This interview was originally recorded October 28th of 2021.